Henry Hartland Steel. Too many numbers. Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honors.
Good morning.
We're here today on an appeal, and I wanted to start out by talking about the context in which this appeal arises, and that is in the, under the bankruptcy code. And the code allows, under the bankruptcy code, if you want to, the code says that a claim that's filed is allowed unless it's objected to.
Right, but could we just, since you have a short argument
yes,
time, I wonder if we could just jump to one point that I think is crucial.
Yes, sir.
You are drawing a distinction between the order of the court confirming a plan on the one hand and the underlying plan itself on the other hand. And I'm troubled by that distinction because in the analogous area, as your opponents point out, but it's true, if a question came up about claim preclusion, the document to which a court would have to refer is not only the confirmation order. The court would have to look at the plan itself to see what was the scope of the plan, to see whether the new claim was fairly encompassed, could have been raised. In other words, in that sense, one does look and must look at both documents. The same thing is true of consent decrees, which are normally entered by an order of the court, but the decree itself will often incorporate a settlement agreement by parties, and you need to look at both of them to see what's going on. And if that's true here as well, then we do need to look at both the plan and the court's order, which would take us, of course, to the argument that the bankruptcy rule that extends, not, it doesn't exempt you from every weekend, it just rolls you over to the first business day after a federal holiday or a weekend day, that rule would apply because it would be by court order.
Well, Your Honor,
9006.
Yeah, you look at that, but I kind of try to draw an analogy to different issues. And for example, if there was a suit for a breach of contract and the court entered an order on the contract, that doesn't make the contract itself a judgment.
But why is your analogy the correct one? Given the law about plans and confirmed plans, they aren't private agreements that are then enforced through the kinds of mechanisms you're talking about any more than a consent decree is. In an antitrust case, there's a big difference between whether you enter into a consent decree or whether there's simply a settlement and the district court dismisses the action with prejudice based on the settlement of the parties. And so here, I think we really are looking at quite different animals.
Well, Your Honor, I guess what I'm saying is that the in this kind of case, a plan is something that the parties get together and they come up with, and it's forced on them by the bankruptcy court. The order of the bankruptcy court, what it does is makes it effective
and
binding.
Well, look, I mean, the parties, they do the same thing with consent decrees. You know, ask Microsoft. They've had plenty of consent decrees, and they may not be thrilled with every provision in them, but you compromise. The same thing is true. If the parties are unsuccessful in writing a plan, the court will figure out what to do about it. Here there is a plan, and I'm mainly concerned with this very distinct difference that your argument seems to depend on between the court's order confirming the plan, which you obviously conceded the court order, and the content of the plan itself, because it seems to me they really cannot be understood one without the other. They're both legal documents, and a party's contractual arrangement doesn't create claim preclusion, for example, but a plan does.
Yeah, well, I think you look at both of them, but you still have to look at what the terms of the plan are. I think the terms of a plan can, if a terms of a confirmed plan can go contrary to what the bankruptcy rules are. It can go contrary to what mortgages or liens or those kind of things. Plans can change what would normally
right.
be a right under those things.
There's no doubt about that, but I suppose the only question is if the plan, if the provision of the plan here about filing the objections within 90 days should be understood as by order of the court, then 9006 rolls it over to Monday.
Right.
I mean, you would love not to have to even discuss this issue, I know, and so you're here, I think, essentially asking us for a windfall. But, okay, you know, there are deadlines. Deadlines work, and maybe you're entitled to that windfall because they didn't file on Sunday. Sunday filings are not that easy to accomplish, by the way. The courts don't make any real promises about that. They say, we'll try to arrange it if we can. But
well, Your Honor, you have to understand that this was a plan proposed by the secured creditors and the certain secured creditors, the banks. They proposed this plan. They drafted the plan. They're the ones that appointed the liquidating agent. It's not like this is some creditor out there that it was shocked or surprised or
what
something.
What are your damages from the one day late filing? Forgive me for interrupting.
Yes,
that's
Your Honor.
Sort of bottom line, isn't it?
Well, the damages are that you, I mean, it's just the same as if somebody has to file a personal injury lawsuit and they miss the deadline. I mean,
you weren't prejudiced, though. You knew this. You were served with the document before it was filed, right?
Your Honor, they
knew it was coming.
No, we didn't, Your Honor. I mean, the plan, it was served on a Thursday.
Oh, you got it on the 7th. You can't really say
no,
you didn't
know. No, Your Honor, it was served on the 7th. We didn't get it on the 7th. This was on a Thursday that this was served or put in the mail. And so you can't say that we knew it was coming. And the plan provides filed and served. And that's what the plan says. And that's what 10.1 of the plan says. No, Your Honor, you can also note that when we're talking about the order of the court, and the order confirming the plan, if you look at that, you look at the, they provided in that order for if you wanted to file a professional fee or application to get paid, it says in that order, where they wanted to say so, that you had to file it within 30 days of the confirmation. That's in the order. But there's nothing in that order about file objections to claims. That is in the plan. So there's a distinction. They could have put it in the order. They didn't put it in the order. And if I can just get back to what are your damages? I mean, your damages are that you have to litigate a claim and go through a trial. When in fact, if they didn't file it, they're only getting 25% of their claim anyway. I mean, even if they win.
Look. If a plan allows a liquidating agent no more than 90 days from the effective date of the plan to file objection, shouldn't she get 90 days? And I mean, in other words, it's and tell me if I'm wrong. What I think you're saying to us is the plan says it gives her 90 days, but in reality, she only really gets 88. And that would go against your plain reading of the contract agreement.
Well, it's 90 days within the effective date of the plan, so it doesn't really go against that. And sure, they could file it on a Friday, but they could file it on a Sunday.
I'm saying not that easily. The court would not be. The court, I don't know how many Sunday filings you've made, but you've got to go through all sorts of rigmarole to get something filed on a Sunday, and the court might not think that the circumstances were exigent enough.
It's only for exigent
circumstances. But understand it.
How is this an exigent circumstance?
Well, I don't know whether it's an exigent circumstance or not. All I know is they've known about this.
No, see, it would have to be for a Sunday filing. It would absolutely have to be an exigent circumstance.
Yeah. Well, I don't.
Otherwise, the plan gives her 88 days.
Well, the plan, the rules also say the bankruptcy courts are open. I mean, I haven't had to.
Have you ever been in this courthouse on Sunday morning?
No, I haven't, Your Honor. I'm sure it's pretty quiet around here.
You actually couldn't get in unless the guard decided to open the door for you.
But I'm sure if you made arrangements on Friday and you could do that. I mean, I'm not sure, but I would think you could. But thank you, Your Honor. My light's on, so I'm going to...
That's okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Malley.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Your turn to be tormented.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is John Malley from Barnes & Thornburg in Indianapolis, counsel for Margaret Good, the liquidating agent in this matter. the judgment rendered below by the district court.
What happened to the secretary who mailed this document to Terre Haute?
I believe the secretary is still employed, Your Honor.
Where?
my knowledge at our firm. The judgment below should be affirmed for the reasons this court has addressed and touched on already this morning.
But your opponent does make the argument that, you know, deadlines always feel harsh when they get missed by a day. There's no doubt about that. We hear these kinds of problems. And I've seen people at the Supreme Court lose their petition because they filed a day late and it was jurisdictionally out of time. Very frustrating. But there they are. I mean, they're deadlines. And when it says no later than or words to that effect, why don't you file on Friday?
Certainly, Your Honor, any time during those 90 days, the objections to the claims could have been filed. There is no penalty for filing on the 90th day and applying the bankruptcy rule.
But, of course, you didn't literally file on the 90th day. You filed on the 91st, and that's the problem.
That's correct, Your Honor, but not on the 92nd day. Then we would have those draconian consequences of you missed it by a day.
Well, you're rephrasing the question, actually. The question is, does 90 days mean 90 days, or does it mean, you know, possibly 91, possibly 92. Imagine if it was one of those, you know, Columbus Day weekend or some such thing. It could stretch out a bit.
That's absolutely right, Your Honor. And because this is a plan confirmed by the bankruptcy court and thus a period of time prescribed by court order, Rule 9006A thus applies. And a Saturday or Sunday end of time period deadline rolls over to the next business day.
But how do we know that this is not an instance in which the language of the plan itself was supposed to supersede that? I suppose the plan could have said file objections within 60 days, for example. And then if you were here on the 91st day, you actually wouldn't be here because it would be so clear that you were late. At that point, it wouldn't be worth litigating.
We know that from several sources, Your Honor. The bankruptcy court's order confirming the plan and the plan itself, neither of them have such language that say, in effect, there is no rollover, there is no extension. In fact, to the contrary, getting outside of Rule 9006A, which does apply because this is an order prescribed by a court, we also then have other provisions. Section 7.15 of the plan speaks to rolling over for transactions. Indiana law, to the extent that that applies, similarly would roll this over to the Monday, the first business day.
Why isn't it correct, as the appellants argue, that there are really two documents at issue here? In other words, the plan and the confirmation order. The timeliness in the plan would be, or are governed by the strict terms of the freely negotiated plan, as they would be in contract law.
And
the timelines within the confirmation order are, like all other time frames, imposed by the bankruptcy court.
Two reasons, Your Honor. First of all, this plan itself incorporates and uses bankruptcy rules and procedure to give life to these dates. For instance, this plan, pursuant to the language of the plan itself, has no effect whatsoever until, one, the bankruptcy judge reviews it pursuant to the bankruptcy code and approves it. Two, then, 10 days was entered on the docket, which happened on November 27, 2001. Then we look to Bankruptcy Rule 8002, pursuant to the plan, to get our 10 days to when this plan is now a final order. The plan itself uses the term final order. They're relying on a final order to try to determine, to try to assert that the objections to the claims were untimely. If there were no bankruptcy involvement, no bankruptcy court involvement, no order, final order per the terms of the plan, they would not have any legs to stand on. Secondly, as a matter of established bankruptcy practice and law, including, as this circuit has determined, and using in the Harvey decision, talking about a bankruptcy confirmation plan is akin to a consent decree. And in that case, did involve, as the court has noted today, preclusion principles, res judicata. This plan is not like a private contract that doesn't impact anyone else. Once this plan becomes a final order, as a matter of bankruptcy law, as a matter of preclusion law, it bars everything related to this debtor forever. Thus, it is integrally part of the bankruptcy court, and thus is a final order and a final judgment of the court.
Could you explain your position about Indiana common law, contract, We have an 1862 case, and then we have this recent opinion of Judge Posner. Do we have any other information about
that? Certainly, Your Honor. There are three separate independent bases for this court to affirm the judgment below. The first is Rule 9006A. The second is that plan itself allows for any transaction, which transaction would include a court filing, that we roll over to the next business day. The third basis for this court to affirm, this is separate independent basis, and the court would have to rule against the liquidating agent in all three of these reasons to find for the appellants here, is the Indiana law provision, which has been raised by appellants, arguing that, well, under Indiana, this is a contract that needs to be interpreted according to contract law. Well, let's go through that exercise, starting with, for instance, Williston on contracts, which says the majority rule across the country, as a matter of contract law, is if something is due on a Sunday, we roll over to the next business day. Why is that? It makes perfect sense. Businesses are closed. Courts are closed. In fact, Bankruptcy Rules 5001, relied upon by appellants, actually says, well, it says courts are always open, it says clerks are open on the business days and are not open on the weekends. And in fact, they are not open on the weekends. Why else? U.S. Mail does not operate on Sundays. So, as a matter of contract law, Indiana has, the only decisions in Indiana addressing this, have said that you would roll over the next business day. And otherwise, the majority rule across the country still appears to be that's the case. Now, some cases have determined, well, if it's a commercial matter, if it is something between a consumer and a retailer, for instance, well, that can occur on a Sunday, that you have to make your deposit or whatever it might be. That's different, though, than doing things in courts, which still today, even with electronic filing available in many courts, courts are still closed. And at the time of this case, the only way to file this would have been on a weekday or with exigent circumstances.
Now, the appellants have pointed out that where the plan means business days, it says business days. Here, the plan only says days. How should the plan language have been drafted if the parties really meant for the language to mean 90 days and 90 days only, regardless of which day of the week it falls on?
In other words, make sure I understand Your Honor's question, if this plan were to be drafted in such a way as to preclude any rollover for court filing, that type of language would say there is no rollover for court filings. Bankruptcy rule 9006A does not apply.
Have you ever seen anything like that?
I have not, Your Honor. And strictly as a matter of statutory rule construction, when this court looks at the plan confirmed by the court, which has preclusive effect, thus it is an order, it is a judgment for the language of the plan itself, it's a final order.
If it said business days, would you be excluding all of the weekends following December the 10th? I mean, I'm looking at Rule 6, for example, of the Civil Procedure Rules, and it may be that they didn't mean to say business days in that sense, that only, you know, each week has 5 days, as it were.
If this time period were less than 8 days for the bankruptcy rules, you would exclude the intermediate rules.
Right, yeah, and just analogously to the Civil Procedure Rules, but I'm trying to look at the way the plan itself was drafted, and if the plan had said business days, then presumably none of the weekend days would have counted. Then you're counting all of the weekend days except that last weekend.
That's correct, right? Yeah. And applying Rule 9006A, 7.15 of the plan, and Indiana contract law.
Right. Okay.
There are no further questions, Your Honors. Thank you for your time, and we respectfully ask that the judgment below be affirmed.
Thank you, Your Honor. I guess I would just point out that the plan provision here says that they have no more than 90 days. It doesn't say if they have 90 days. It says they have no more than 90 days, which is different. The second thing is they set their own deadlines when they drafted this plan. And so and the order itself says that a lot of bankruptcy plans, when they have orders confirming that, that order itself incorporates into the plan, into the order, the plan by reference. This order did not do that. And so I think that under those circumstances that when you look at the plan, that they missed their deadline, and they're out of luck as far as objection to the mechanics lien's claim. And I guess I would just address and rebuttal their arguments about the Indiana law. I mean, Indiana, the cases cited in their brief were that were basically either insurance or insurance laws talking about insurance premiums. I think Indiana, modern day business, as cited in Dresser, is that everybody business occurs on any day of the week, Saturdays and Sundays included. We request the court reverse the district court judge. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Thank you both very much. And we will take the case under